Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, host of Dynasty Game Night. My co-host John Bosch and I created this podcast for one reason, to focus on fun. After all, fun is the reason we all started playing fantasy football in the first place. I love games of all sorts, card games, board games, video games, really any kind of game you can think of. So one day, John and I decided it was time for a podcast where we just play games. You might learn something along the way, but you won't find much hard-hitting analysis here. Check out all the other incredible podcasts DLF has to offer for that sort of thing. On Dynasty Game Night, our primary focus is to entertain. So if you like playing games or watching game shows, this might just be the podcast for you. We'd love for you to give it a listen and play along with the contestants and maybe even win a chance to be on the show.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard, FBA Howdy on Twitter. We are, in fact, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. My co-host, Jake Anderson, at Jake Anderson FF on Twitter, is still not available. So I'm roping in some more of our friends to try and make this show interesting and engaging, which is not something not particularly one of my strong suits. So this week I've got John Bosch,
that's it.
John Bosch FF. He is on every podcast, if I remember right, and the creator of every league. I think everyone plays in a John Bosch league. He's been described in a variety of different ways, but I think doesn't Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies like to call you a mad scientist or something like that?
I think he does refer to me that as sometimes. Described in many ways, that can be good or bad. So
that's kind of what
I think it's fitting. That's we'll call that fitting.
Par for the course. I don't really have a great subject, but I want to continue on our discussion that I was actually talking about with speaking of Zach. Not so long ago, about league winners and the difference between them. I know everyone's got championship matchups they've got to worry about, and this week is really important, but part of why our podcast comes out late in the week is we tend to try and stay more broad, talk about player evaluation or process, and when we come to the end of the season, we're really focused on things that we may or may not have learned from the 2019 season. So I guess that's the first question, John. Like,
biggest takeaway is nothing matters.
Nothing matters. No.
Nothing matters.
haven't we always known that kind of really? Like, nothing matters but air yards, right?
Yeah. I mean, this...
Running back stunt
man. I'm still going to have an okay season by the end of it, but that's only because I play in so many leagues. I don't know how people handle it if they play in one or two leagues. And their league has been decided by what some of these leagues are getting decided by. You know, Brashad Perriman. Yay! Mike Boone! Mike Boone's going to be on championship rosters.
Alexander Mattison on so many playoff teams that are now gone.
Good thing. That handcuff all year. Just waiting for Dalvin to go down, and now it's going to be Mike Boone. I mean, like, that's the... It's heartbreaking this time of year. We do so much work all year thinking that everything that we do is going to be what leads us to the championship. And then it's getting a freaking lucky player off the goddamn waiver wire. That Jake already got, because you're right. Jake's the waiver wire wizard.
Waiver wire. Somehow he can't find time for a podcast, but he does literally spend his entire life looking at the waiver wire, making sure he gets whoever you're going to want in about a week. And it might be an edge I need to explore more. Now I'm playing up against most of my leagues now with you and Jake. And like, the edges we tell people about don't work when everyone's doing them. I've really been trying to break down just a little bit, because I'm still in the midst of projections and doing projections for the playoffs as well. So my offseason won't start for a while here. But like, just looking over some rosters, it's what I was telling you about the league I'm in that you designed, which is an auction league, and I hate it. I'm a very vanilla league player, it turns out. Like, the more you give me to think about, I'm like, I research for weeks the most mundane stuff. So if you give me complicated stuff, it's like, oh, well, there's a year of my life right there before I can play.
This is a salary cap league, and that's nothing but numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is right up your alley.
You can't give me a variable... Because, like, I want to spend a year researching it, and I have to play this week, so I can't. And it's so it kind of gets pushed under the bus, and then I don't know what to do. But yeah, I was looking at that team and my others, and what I found, and looking over my ranks, pre-draft, post-draft, and just general takes that I've put out there on this podcast and on Twitter, I can't find where I'm wrong. And I'm not saying that, like, I know everything right, because, like, I've had a terrible year. Like, in the leagues, like, I did some draft consultants leagues, and I was really paying attention to them. And in my public leagues, which I'm dropping this off-season, yeah, I smashed the shit out of those. That's fine. But, like, in the league that you design and the league with anyone like Jake or the Outhouse League, Outhouse's Trade Addicts League, where people are as active as me, one, I wasn't paying enough attention. I wasn't playing the waiver wire game nearly as strongly as even I normally do, let alone Jake. But, like, my teams are good. And looking at my takes and looking at who I liked and my ranks, like, last year I got shit wrong and I understood where I went wrong and I think I improved. This year, I don't, like, who didn't like Christian McCaffrey? I had him as a running back one for the Scott Fishbowl and everything. Obviously, you can only draft him if you have the first spot, and I played silly because it was fun for me. But, like, those aren't the players that I really, I criticize myself for getting right or wrong. Because you really can only get them if you have one of those top few picks. It's really out of your control, especially in regular snake draft. So it's the others. But, like, none of the ones that are hitting right now, I like them. I argued for them in many cases. But I didn't reach high enough over whoever took them above me, if you know what I mean? So, like, it's early days breaking it down, but I'm finding a lot of that. And then the ones that I did get, like, Austin Eckler is looking at, like, one of the biggest values for this season. And he's still going strong, even with Melvin Gordon on the field. So, like, he's going to finish something like 38 spots ahead of where he was drafted, and I have him in almost every league. And yet even, like, in that league that you designed, where I didn't even make the playoffs, I don't think, like, I got Austin Eckler, so I got one of the best hits this season, and my team's still kind of middling. I'm like, what's going on? I really don't understand 2019 in that way. Like, I can't point to a big player I wasn't high on, or one of the league winners that I didn't get enough of. It's almost like I didn't get enough of them concentrated in one league, and I'm attributing it mostly right now to the competition level. Now, you don't have takes on individual players, as we all know, as big fans of John Bosch, but, like, is there a position you think acted strangely this season that might continue to act strangely?
I mean, the easy one to pick on is tight end, because we just don't know what to expect week in, week out from tight end, beyond, like, what, the top six? I mean, do we even feel comfortable at six, maybe? And the most recent tight ends to go off, they were nobody before. I mean, Tyler Higbee's been controlling it down the stretch. Maybe he's going to disappear now if Everett's back in the lineup. So I think tight end's the position. I used to attack tight end by saying, you know what, I'm just going to get, like, three or four of them, and I'll play the matchups week in, week out. Well, unfortunately, you can't have 16 of them, and you can't play the Arizona defense every single week. So it's not like DraftKings where you can just pick and choose your tight end. You have to have them on your roster. So I think I really have come around to saying, like, tight end, that's the one that I'm just going to start paying up for it. I mean, I don't care if it looks like an overpay. That's a position where I'm tired of getting a guy that goes out and gets me 7 or 8 points. I used to be okay with that. Like, that was fine. Give me 7 or 8. I'm going to invest elsewhere. But the fact that I would have to get 4 or 5 tight ends on a roster, like, that roster space becomes valuable. That takes away being able to add a DJ Chark off the waiver wire. One thing that I noticed on the teams that I do have DJ Chark, or did at the beginning of the season, and I've traded him away since, it was on teams where I had, like, so much flexibility to do whatever I wanted with the last, like, 4 or 5 spots on my roster. And most of that was because I only had one tight end on there. There was a couple of teams where I had, like, 2 running backs because I only use running backs when I want them at the end to win. I mean, like, running backs are the last thing. So I would have my team just stacked with wide receivers. And that's how I ended up getting a guy like DJ Chark. So I think, while it might seem like an overpay to just go out and get the tight end that you want and the tight end that you think is going to be the right one, the one that you feel safe playing every single week, I think the added value in what you can do with those roster spots, I think it's worth it to me. So, I mean, I'm going to try and target getting that that advantage at the tight end slot. You know, I have a lot of Kelce right now because I started to make that transition to the tight end, getting one of them for this year. So I paid up a lot for Kelce. I don't know if he's going to be the guy in 2020. But if I
don't
I can
know
go
if
he's
the guy this year.
Yeah, I mean, he was
like,
he,
we don't
was,
have a Gronk. I mean, I agree with
he was
what
good
you're
enough.
Seeing. I agree with what you're saying broadly. Like, I really, the roster spots are an interesting point because I feel like I do really well at tight end, man. Not to float my boat on something, but for
no,
some
you
reason,
because you wait and you get them 2 years after their draft.
Yeah,
and
it's a really good system.
Give up.
It works. Like this year I struggled because I didn't get Austin Hooper. I got Austin Hooper last year, then traded him because that's what you do. And going back to the, I don't know Austin Hooper is it either. Like, we don't have a Gronk. We don't have a player that's worth paying up that much for that can never really make that much of a difference right now. I'm not sure. Maybe George Kittle. Maybe. I'm not saying
Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews is the guy I'm going to go for, I think.
See, Mark Andrews is really good, but he's like a Hunter Henry. He's not Jimmy Graham level even. Like, that much of a difference maker compared to the rest of the field. And it might be that the field is spreading a little more. And that's the reason, more than the heights aren't as good. It's just that the field is spreading. Now we have five instead of two, kind of a thing.
The ability to put Mark Andrews in there, I never feel like he's going to have a floor game of zero. I mean, if I throw Tyler Higbee in this weekend, he might get me zero. I don't think
with
Mark
Gerald
Andrews
Everett,
is ever coming out with zero. You know? Like, even Darren Waller, like, he boomed. But this guy's had some years in the past that weren't the best. So I'm not ready to fully trust Darren Waller yet. You know, it's great to have him right now. It's great the season that he had. If I can move off of him to, like I said, Mark Andrews, I think that's my target. That's the tight end. I have a good amount of him because I like them coming into this year, thankfully. But anywhere I don't have him, I think I'm going to go try and get him because I want to just have that nice, safe tight end floor.
And that's fine.
I think it's an advantage in the leagues.
I think it's an advantage because it's so tilting that people, even like you, will do that. Like, you're not making the mistake of, I'm going to draft Kittle in round one, which is how you lose out in Dalvin Cook. But at the same time, like, I had Austin Hooper last year and sold him. And I'll do the same with Andrews and Waller. I've got a team with Andrews and Waller, by the way, in redraft. Like, still struggling. Because they're just not to just keep using Gronk. But
nobody's going to be Gronk.
That's
ever
the thing. No one in this group is.
Quit looking for Gronk, Patriots fan.
No, quit. Look for the next Waller. Look for the next Andrews. And these guys are good. And I think, you know.
Yeah, but that's so hard to hit on Waller Andrews, on a guy like that. Andrews was a little bit easier to see coming.
It's not that hard. But, and if it's not, then you can still
can
get.
Nobody saw Waller coming.
Then you can still get top 12.
I mean, they did,
him.
But
you,
not till late.
You can still get those 7-8 points from. If you miss on him. Like, I missed. I didn't grab the new Hooper. I didn't grab Andrews in every league. I got him in a few. And I didn't get Waller in every league. But I got, like, Dallas Goedert in a few. And I've got, I had Foster Moreau running for me a while. And that goes back to your point on roster space. Like, if I don't hit on that one or two, then I end up, it takes three roster spots, essentially. That's what the system requires. And I think that's where it's a difference making, like you said, because you can't add as many players that might turn into DJ Chark. I think that's where the edge is. But again,
I think that's a huge edge to be able to get a wide receiver, because I feel like wide receivers kind of can hit with a little bit easier. They're going to hit than a tight end out of nowhere.
But the other danger of that is Hunter Henry. Like, I ended up with a lot of Hunter Henry this year because he was cheaper than he should have been. And it should have worked out, but he got injured again. And that can easily happen to the Andrews. And then you've paid more for safety that no longer exists. And you're back to using extra roster spots, except you also have to use another spot for the guy you reached up for. Like, I don't think we're in a place right now, just with what's available, that justifies spending more on it. But that's me. Tight end, man, it's boring. No one cares about tight end,
but
me.
You enjoy getting your 7 or 8. Now, I do like your. I love how you actually attack tight ends. And to back up Mark Andrews, I would love to have Dallas Goedert and Mike Gesicki. Like, those are the two. I want that combo. Give me Andrews and Gesicki, or give me Andrews and Goedert, and then I feel like, you know what, I'm good. I don't have to go filling my roster with two or three more tight ends. I don't have to put any more on there. I'm good with what I got. I'm going to roll them out, and I'm going to go ahead and take shots on wide receivers. And hell, I'm going to take shots on running backs and just save them for freaking ever. And then when Mike Boone comes in to win the championships, oh, jeez. Tilting. Sorry. The Dalvin Cook teams are feeling the pain this week.
I got kicked out by the Buffalo defense on my Dalvin Cook team. So, like, lost by 2 points when they had 25 points from the, like, it was a great team, too. Just because the Buffalo defense, and I was down a little bit more than usual because Dalvin Cook suffered. It was painful.
Yeah, don't play with defenses.
Biggest win is a wide receiver to switch position, because like I say, I think only I find tight end interesting, to be honest. John Brown, interestingly enough, Michael Gallup, and AJ Brown make the top three players drafted rounds 8 to 11, 8 and beyond. I think that's the kind of range I'm looking for, you know. Above that, you really are ADP dependent. It's whether you can trade up or trade down to get the right picks, to get the right players. But I think rounds 8 onwards are where people are swinging for the fences. You know, everyone's reaching on their ADP a little bit. And those are the three players that stuck out to me between rounds 8 and 10 per Dynasty League ADP. Now, Gallup was... Guy got lucky, honestly. I lost a little bit of faith in Gallup after last year, especially when Cooper came in, but I still liked his profile, and he dropped to wide receiver 54, and I just ended up with him in a lot of places. Cortland Sutton looks pretty good for his draft position. Wide receiver 32, he's finishing 17th right now. And then again, AJ Brown, drafted as wide receiver 41, finishing inside the top 24 at least. There's two different parallels right now. You've got the Devontae Parkers and John Browns in the league for a while, shown some things in John Brown's case and not shown others. Now they're getting a little bit older. Is there a type of wide receiver you hunt in the off season for next year? Is it the guy who's more proven that finally did it 1 year? Or is it rookie fever time, or sophomore season time?
For me, it's basically trying to diversify. Just because of the league volume that I have. You mentioned Devontae Parker. I don't have any Devontae Parker because I have literally never liked him. So thankfully, I have not been along for the bust years. So I'm not a scarred Devontae Parker owner. But that means I have none. Well, let's say he does actually maintain this, and he is the number one wide receiver in Miami. Miami brings in a quarterback that becomes exciting. All of a sudden, I want to have some Devontae Parker. Guy I have a lot of that was getting a little bit older is T.Y. Hilton. I straight up traded one for one. I think I lost value on the trade, but I'm okay with that because to me, it's just basically hedging a bet, you know, that maybe Devontae Parker is going to be this one. If he does, then I'm not completely missing out. And I'm not across all of my leagues, I'm not completely zero. And if something happens to T.Y. Hilton, like I have so much exposure that hurt me this year. So it was worth it to me to go ahead and get rid of him. That's the kind of move I try to make at wide receiver. I think they're a little bit more predictable. I don't typically seek out just like one guy and say, I want to add him to every single one of my rosters because I think that's a high, high risk. One injury then, and you have a lot of rosters that are going to have some gaps. So wide receivers, I do evaluate at the end of the year and I see what my exposure is because throughout the year it changes. I make trades often for whatever I need, you know, for the next week, for the next 3 weeks, for the rest of the season. So at the end of the season, I kind of have to do a reset and I might have to shuffle some cards around a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds really boring. I could go in, like, I see you're one of these filthy quarterbacks matter for wide receiver people. I'd love to have that argument again. But I just noticed something, and I know...
Wait, what did you just say?
Are you one of the filthy quarterbacks make the difference for wide receiver people? And I'm not really on that train.
I think there's a lot of things that make the difference for a wide receiver.
Don't back out now, John. You've put yourself on the
fence. No. I think talent's the least important part of it. You know that.
No, but there's a player here I just noticed that's finishing
system
higher.
System and quarterback above all.
Higher than where he was drafted. And you're pretty much the only one I know that's had like a firm opinion one way or the other, let alone yours is positive. And Darius Slayton, he's someone I've seen you mention a few times in different places. I have no opinion on him, and I've been meaning to ask you why you like him.
Oh, I'm the wrong... Bobby, you got to ask Bobby about him. Bobby's big on Darius Slayton, which is nice because Bobby talked about him a lot, so I added him on a couple of Dynasty teams before he kind of got a little movement, which was nice. The reason I love Darius Slayton is because he won me money in DFS. I mean, that's plain and simple. He's got a place in my heart from 1 week of production where I happened to play him pretty heavy and he hit. So, I mean, I do like him. I'm not somebody that's going to go out and give up a late first to early second, which I think is kind of his going rate right now. That seems expensive to me. I will just wait. And as the offseason, you know, goes on, Evan Ingram's healthy again. You know, people are seeing Sterling Shepard got a high volume this past game. He might not have had the same stats that Slayton did, but Sterling Shepard gets looks in the Giants offense. Now, granted, that was with Eli Manning, so maybe it's a little bit different with Daniel Jones. But I'm not seeking out Slayton for the prices that he is right now. I think that's way too expensive.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I like him. Don't get me wrong. I like him, but I'm not paying a late first, early second for him. That's just too much for me.
That's kind of the way it worked out with projections as well, noticing that Slayton's got the production, but Shepard's got all the volume. It's going to be interesting in week 16. But again, we don't care.
I'd rather go get Shepard for probably a late second, early third. Like, if I want a piece of the Giants offense, if I want a piece of their wide receivers,
so no.
I'll go get Sterling Shepard.
So you're not. Okay, cool. that fire that is the Giants offense. Daniel Jones might be back this week, though, I hear. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Another one of these wide receivers, which might create a bit of a question mark this season, fits in the John Brown mold. Like, what are you thinking about Jameson Crowder right now? He's been getting the volume all year.
So he's always been like the type of guy that I just can't go in on. And I know they're a secret weapon in PPR, not so secret weapon. That's never been the wide receiver that I want, a guy that it's awesome those weeks that he catches 11 balls, you know, that's great. But on the other weeks where he gets, you know, five catches for like 50, 60 yards, I will not be investing in Jameson Crowder. I can understand if you need a wide receiver in, you know, he's the only one that's available. He's probably not terribly expensive. I have not looked up anything about him because I have no interest in going to get him. Slayton was one that I've kind of followed the market on because I have some vested interest. Crowder, I don't know. What would you do? You give any interest in Crowder?
Not really, no.
Okay.
he's been great this season.
He's paired with a young quarterback, like, but he also is paired with Adam Gase, like...
Yeah, I liked him early in his career, but it's one of those things. Sometimes players have good years outside their first 3-4 years, but even where he was drafted, to do it this late, it's kind of a signal. It follows a trend of it not continuing. That's the way I was going to say it. Like, he's obviously a good player, but he's just not impressing him enough. What's the right phrase here? Clutch factor? Like, he's been this guy in this position numerous times just because he's finally done something with the Jets, frankly. Like, he fails at it more often than not and just does fine instead of actually producing some of these good weeks. So probably not is where I'm going to land on Jameson Crowder. He's finishing wide receiver 29 or so on the season so far. I just noticed a name, since you were mentioning Devante Parker. I actually haven't run this one across my brain. Like, Preston Williams.
Yes. Now you'll see my face light up. I like him a lot.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
And why do you like him? Mr. Diversification. I have 50 leagues. That's why I get to like players.
Okay, so I don't like players. I like him because he's... I mean, I think I can go out and I think I can get him for... I bet I could get maybe a second. Like, I'm guessing he's in the second range. I know we talked positively about Devante Parker. I'm still kind of skeptical, let's call it, about Devante Parker. We've seen more bad than good from Devante Parker. Preston Williams, he's a good player. I mean, he fell because of, you know, some non-football issues, we'll say. So maybe he's got that straightened out. I think he was having a great season. The fact that he's ending up injured, I think that makes him affordable in the offseason. You know, people did not invest much to get him. Maybe they got him off the waiver wire. Maybe they took him in the fourth round. So if you come floating around with like a second round pick, I think people will jump at that. I don't really want to pay an early second for him either, but if I can squeeze him for a late second, like, I'm going to feel pretty good about that. I like the position that he had in that offense, and I do think Miami brings in a quarterback. I know you're saying quarterbacks don't make the wide receivers, but they definitely have an impact. So, that's an offense that in the past I've never really wanted any of it. But I assume they're going to draft. I mean, let's face it. We all kind of think they're going to get Tua, right? If they get Tua, I'm going to feel.
is that a running back? I don't know.
Oh, Peter. He's a quarterback. Okay. Assuming they get him, that's an offense that I think looks like it could have an upswing. You know, we've seen what some recent quarterbacks have done for some offenses that were a little stagnant before that. They can come in and electrify an offense pretty quickly.
I know, man. I think your teams are going to be stacked with Miami and Giants players at this point. I think we need to do a little better for you. But
there are some teams where I would like cross off their list, and I'm like, I'm not taking Washington players. I think I have Adrian Peterson on some teams because, you know, he's old and cheap. But right. I don't know that I have any Washington wide receivers, which, you know, maybe I'm going to miss out on the big Terry McLaurin, but I'll take the risk because I don't want to have Josh Doctson over and over. Just certain teams I do totally avoid.
Right.
The Dolphins usually are one of them, but, you know, I think I saw enough spark in their fantasy production this year that I'm not completely avoiding the Dolphins going forward. Same with the Giants. They were the same way, except for Saquon, obviously. Even Ingram made me nervous.
Yeah, it's one of the parts where we cross over the most. Like, it's difficult in some cases, because I play the value game as much as anyone in Dynasty League. I think it's one of the smartest ways to play it, but, like, what I enjoy is taking a stance on a player and getting it right or wrong. Either way is fun.
Peter. I love the work that you do, because it makes it easier for me to figure out players. Like,
I know, but
I'm glad somebody's doing it.
I'm so addicted to it that I can't commit to value like the way you do. So it's interesting in some ways, but we do cross over a lot when it comes to, like, I just don't want none of that team. Like, I just don't want it. Like, God be with you, New York Jets player holders. Yeah. I just get rid of Gase and then do something, and then I just don't want it. And the same with Washington right now, but that comes more to player evaluation with Macklin as well, but which seems really unfair at this point. It's going to take a while before anyone gives me a break on the Macklin hype, I think.
What do you think about the Titans? The Titans were a passing offense that were, let's call it, heavily avoided. I mean, like, A.J. Brown dropped solely because he was drafted by the Titans, and people are like, nope, don't want any A.J. Brown now. what do you think about the Titans now that, you know, Tannehill's got to be coming back?
I think there are a lot of reasons, a lot of lessons in the Titans. One, I was both right and wrong. I was all on the Corey Davis train, but having literal staying up late wondering how I can get A.J. Brown, because I really did like him as a player, and he was just falling in this draft position where I was just never getting him. But I liked him. I didn't like the argument in this situation where the team is so terrible that it can't produce good wide receivers. So there's a lot of shit going on right there. So let me slow down here. The problem with the Titans offense is it's low volume, and the fact they're doing well this season, it's probably going to stay low volume. Ryan Tannehill has seemed to introduce, whether he works better for the system or not, he seemed to introduce an element of efficiency. I do not trust Ryan Tannehill to be the Russell Wilson of Tennessee. Like, that's what he would have to do to keep up the passing offense. And I just don't trust him to do that. I don't think Mariota was that bad either. So I think I know what we're capturing here. Ryan Tannehill's better for the system. He's never been a terrible quarterback, but never been a great quarterback. I assume, unlike Russell Wilson, Tannehill has to fall back down to earth because he's just not that level. But at the same time,
I think we'll look back at 2019 Ryan Tannehill, and this will be the best year of his career.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing to learn from it is, and this is coming from someone who really went in on third-year Corey Davis. It's time to get out on third year Corey Davis. Like, if you don't do it in the first 3 years, it's a problem.
I still like him.
I still like him, but it's a big problem. And that's the other lesson here. Like, Corey Davis had the volume thrown to him. Yeah. And that's what I said about his draft cap on. I thought his profile was good enough to say he could do something with it. And he was definitely a prolific receiver in college, and Devontae Parker and, like, just him and maybe Kenny Britt in year 8 is showing that good players still can come back from terrible things. But, like, the long trend has this being the last year he's getting artificial volume from his draft capital. And is what he's capable of from college hasn't translated well enough, or he hasn't translated it well enough to do something with it. And that's, I'd say, the other lesson. Like, Tennessee still hasn't become a high passing volume offense. Tannehill's helped, but I don't think the quarterback does enough that it just, like, it could have spread through multiple players and still been this efficient. Tannehill still could have done that. The fact it's all funneling through A.J. Brown and Corey Davis has dropped, I think that's the other lesson here. It's not just the situation of the quarterback. It goes to that thing that I think is true. A.J. Brown, who's shown he can translate his game, however or why ever, better in the NFL level. So I think the passing game's going to be down, but A.J. Brown's definitely shown himself to be a player that can translate well. So without Russell Wilson, what does that become? It's a good question, but I think A.J. Brown's definitely earned himself a place in the top 24, and the nature of his game gives him top 12 upside, just because he's not a crowder. You know, he's not going to play that kind of role. If he's doing well, he has top 12 upside.
What would you cash out on? Corey Davis.
Second round pick.
Somebody offers you, somebody just won, when they win the league championship, they got the 212 now. And they say, you know what? I'll just add, I'll add Corey Davis, and maybe he pops and it helps me get back there next year.
Well, I'm not throwing him away just to throw him away. If I think I can use that second round pick in a trade to get someone else I'm interested in, then yeah, I'm doing it. I'm not holding out much hope for the player is the overall thing here.
So you give him up for the 212?
League situation dependent, but yeah.
I'm trying to nail. I want to nail you down here.
Right.
Yeah. What if he's not going to be a starter?
If he's not going to be a starter, I just hold him for the 212. But if I'm really trying to make a move and I think I can trade the second better than I can trade Corey Davis, then I'll take the second.
Okay. I think Corey Davis is a guy that we will see moved in a lot of leagues in the offseason.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that some people are going to want to buy on the cheap on the off chance that he does Devontae Parker it, you know? I think that's actually going to be something that causes him to be moved. The fact that Devontae Parker finally put it together for a year.
If there's a player that fits that mold, and there really isn't, but if there is one, it is Corey Davis. I still think he has a great draft profile. I still think he did great things in college for every reason.
Man, that was so long ago.
He hasn't done it well enough in the time frame the NFL usually gives you to prove it. And again, that's the A.J. Brown lesson. Like, he's done it remarkably early. Corey Davis had 3 straight years of getting the volume and doing okay. Like, he's not a complete bust. He got a top 25 season. He produced fantasy points. He didn't Josh Doctson. He didn't Breshad Perryman, even though he's now a league winner, apparently.
Obviously.
He didn't Laquon Treadwell. This guy came in, got volume, and did something with it. It's just...
Didn't he put up like 800 yards last year? Like, wasn't he? Yeah, I mean, like 80 catches, 800 yards. Like, it wasn't bad.
It was like 990 something. Like, it was nearly 1,000 yards.
Wow, that's
season
even better.
With 25% market share going into his third year. And that was kind of my argument for him. And he just missed being a breakout player, basically. And it's not because A.J. Brown's there that I fade him. It's purely because he's had the years to prove it. And he came close but didn't do it, which is... Like, if he'd never come close, I'd be completely out. Like, I'd be Josh Doctsoning him. Yeah, sell him for a third. I don't care. But where he did get pretty close in year 2, like, I don't think he's going to be an irrelevant player. But neither's, you know, Marvin Jones. So that's kind of the upside of him for me right now. But yeah. There does seem to be this pattern to, you know, John Brown, Jameson Crowder, even Devontae Parker and, I guess, Breshad Perryman to a certain extent, where the wide receivers that are killing it this year, we've got a few second, well, all the second year breakouts. So these young guys, and then we've got these more veteran guys breaking out. There seems to be a little bit of a trend, which isn't typical. I think that might be something new I noticed this year. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, But a lot of these John Browns and Jameson Crowders showing up a little bit more than we would have expected. Marvin Jones.
That's something that Cotillo has actually kind of helped me with. I used to think that I wanted, like, the stud wide receivers, and that was nice. And it is. I mean, like, having DeAndre Hopkins, it's fantastic. Having Michael Thomas, it's fantastic. But wide receiver is a place where you can get by with, like, volume number twos. Like, you know, and then you can play the matchups. If I'm going to have a roster spot, like, you know, if I'm looking at my whole roster and there's a certain position where I just have way too many of them, I want it to be wide receiver because there's going to be plenty of times where I can slide a guy in because I know the matchup is going to be good enough for him that he's got that upside. And I mean, that's, you know, you and I both listen and dabble in DFS a little bit. And that's where you can pull that kind of stuff. You know, hey, this wide receiver is going to pop this week. The number one guy on the team has a terrible matchup. The volume's going to end up being forced to him. So if I can roster that type of wide receiver, like you said, the John Browns, not that he's the number two, but, you know, some guy that, you know, Robbie Anderson, Jameson Crowder. One week's going to be a Robbie week. Tougher to predict, it seems, but there are people out there that spend a lot of time trying to set up which weeks are going to be a Robbie week, when it's going to be a Jameson Crowder week. So I think that's an advantage, too, for the wide receivers in that range that you're talking about, stacking them in there and playing the matchups. The investment into them is a whole lot cheaper than trying to go out and get a stud wide receiver.
Yeah, I really recommend DFS content for that. Just a different way of thinking about the game. Like, I've been listening to it for years for that reason.
It's huge.
There are some lessons which I'm firm on. Not these guys are all smarter than me, but if you ever hear them doing a rookie evaluation, fade it the hell out of your life. There's not a single DFS player I can think of, outside of the ones that also do Dynasty, like Evan Silva's an exception, obviously. But DFS, people that are like genius DFS players cannot evaluate rookies to save their fucking lives. They just care about, they basically care about 40 times. So whenever
it's a 1 week season for them, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, they get it wrong week to week every year because they think this rookie's got something. So no, a rookie doesn't have anything. and that's like the only extra edge I've found in DFS. There's one, you know, when me pittance, but it does. When you fade the popular streamer because DFS guys like their 40 time, and you're like, that's not it, Chief. But yeah, outside of that, DFS is fantastic content. It's been tricky to figure out how to fit it into my game. We can't open up a whole branch of another subject here, but it'd be interesting. Like, the obvious way to think about it is DFS content helps you with start-sit decisions, like you were just saying. But so much of it is about ownership and variance and playing volume in those competitions that it's not straight easily transferable to start sit decisions. You know, they were playing Justin Watson last week as much as they were playing Breshad Perriman in different contests, for example, in order to get that variance and try for different lineup structure. So there's an element to the game that doesn't translate well. And so early on in listening to DFS content, I got the value of it wrong a lot. Like, have you found that with DFS content? There's not a direct line to start sit because there's other aspects of the game that they're considering that don't translate, like volume and variance.
I don't use it just for start sit. I mean, I do. I think it is fantastic for start sit, actually.
It helps out, yeah.
Because you can end up starting a guy like Danny Amendola that you look at your roster when you go to hit submit lineup on MFL and you're like, Danny Amendola, like, I don't want to play him.
Really?
But if you've been listening and you're like, oh, okay, so the matchup's going to be good for Danny Amendola, maybe you're gonna think about that a little bit more, and that might help you with your start sit there. That's a guy that otherwise you're kind of like, he feels like he's a roster clogger and you're never going to use him. But when you hear that from a daily fantasy perspective, and I understand, like, they're focusing a lot because of the value, the cost of him makes him really, really appealing in DFS. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he's got the right matchup to become appealing. So I do use it for some start sit, but what I use it for even more, oh man, when there is a guy that's like almost an unknown, when I hear like, oh, this guy's got a real low salary, he's got a place to pop this week, I look for the waiver wire, and I look to see if I can add him. I'll never forget Taylor Gabriel was the first one that really, really worked out on. It was like, might have been 2 years ago. all of a sudden he got started, people started talking Taylor Gabriel. And I was like, okay, well, I went and I added him in a few leagues. I immediately traded him after that week because he did go off. And I was able to get, I don't know, I think I got like some third round picks for him.
That's probably what I mean.
Probably turned him into absolutely nothing. But I use it for more than just the start sits.
That's what I
if
mean.
If I can get a guy.
That's another aspect of it, where they only have the week to consider. Something I always have to point out about matchup stats is we remember when it works. It's like Emmanuel Sanders had a great slot matchup the other week, and it worked out, and it was true. And for DFS, it's like, that's all you need. That's
terrible.
Why they keep
then he's
using
terrible the next week.
And the next great slot matchup, it doesn't work. Because matchup stats are really informative, and there are people in DFS are really good at saying, this week it matters. That's why they're really good to listen to and learn from. But mm-hmm. if you try and apply that more broadly, like just as a, for myself, a layman, always get it wrong, because matchup stats hurt you more as often as they help you. They're basically a coin flip, which is the same with any roster decision. So it can highlight players.
We'd be really good at this if we never had to make lineup decisions.
That's the thing. You need someone in the DFS industry to really break it down and go, look, this week this matchup matters. And that's why they're really good. It's not because they're paying attention to matchup stats. It's because they are looking at it so deeply on a week-to-week level that they're able to pinpoint when the matchup stats that matter are actually going to matter. So broad matchup stats are still no use predictively. Like, don't play a player just because of matchup stats. But DFS guys are so good at it that when they start highlighting, like you were saying about Danny Amendola, he's had good target share and good matchups almost every week this year. But when they mention it, that's because they're spending so much attention paying to that week-to-week volume. Like I say, it's a really interesting thing to get into, even if it's just a way to think about the game, a way to highlight players that way. Personally, I find it a really weird, not weird, but awkward thing to incorporate into my more common leagues, Dynasty and Redraft, because it doesn't equally translate. They're dealing with so many more variables. Incredibly useful.
Correct.
But different variables. And so if you start, like, I'm just thinking, like, someone listens to this and goes out and tries to use it. It's like, I would listen for a while, see how it works, because I made a lot of mistakes when DFS content first crossed my desk. I was like, I got to use this for every start sit decision, and it. Yeah,
I'm gonna play my $3,000. I'm gonna play the $3,000 wide receiver exactly. over Adam Thielen. No, you don't do that.
That's such
like
good value to get. You're not paying
they are
salary.
Great value on DraftKings. Yeah, not so much when you're just submitting your regular line. So I mean, you're right. You do, like, you have to figure out how to parse through it. But you can get nuggets from DFS podcasts and content that you're not going to get elsewhere. I mean, you're just not. I mean, it's their job to do it. It's their livelihood to look. You said they spend so much time. They also spend so much money on this.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So, like, for me, that's a pretty big confidence boost that these people are putting in the work. I'm going to go ahead and listen to them because I trust they're putting their livelihood on the line. Yeah, that to me makes me feel a little bit more confident in the amount of work they put into
it. Like I said, it's become almost must consume content for me. It's just learn how to translate it a little bit. And it's for different people. Like, you and me have different processes, so we fit it in different ways. And like, that's my caution. Not that they're not right. It's just learn it first so you know how
I mean
best
in,
to use
in
it.
Season I listen to more DFS content and redraft content than I probably do straight up dynasty content, because in season I'm right. trying to win in season, like,
exactly, yeah.
You know, everybody talks about, oh, now we as soon as the season kicks off we all shift to redraft mode. Well, yeah, we do. I mean, there's always, you know, the back burner of trying to build for the future in some scenarios and stuff like that. But I mean, if you're not operating in a redraft mode in season, it means you're probably not trying to win that league that year.
Right. Right.
I like winning.
I think everyone does, John, on the whole. Although, yeah, like I said, I do enjoy,
it's fun.
I enjoy getting it wrong almost as much because I don't have my livelihood on the road. So I can just enjoy the pit. The peaks on either end are almost as fun. The tilting is as fun as the flexing.
Yeah, I disagree there, but I've not yet found fun in the tilting part.
I don't know, man.
But, you know.
I obviously like the other experience better, so I'm trying to get it right. But at the same time, that bittersweetness of having stood on a hill and lost, it can be fun. At least, I guess it's Twitter fun more than anything else. But, yeah, I found joy in that too. If you can't, I don't know how you keep going, man. You've got to find some enjoyment in the playment of the game, right? Otherwise, you don't always win. And if you didn't, you'd kill yourself. Maybe not that extreme.
You don't always win?
Oh, I don't. Okay. I do not, John.
Dang, that's it. That's
hang on. All right. I'm just checking our playoff brackets in our league. You in the final over here?
You should try to win more, Peter.
I should try.
No, I'm down there in the toilet bowl with you. Come on now.
I try to win plenty. I just accept that I'm not always going to. It's nice to know that you don't.
I went into that league setting my salary cap up for 2020. That was the intent, and I can't wait, baby.
But why aren't you trying to win, Josh? Why aren't you trying to win, though? I mean,
I know. I rarely, rarely do the not trying to win thing in the first year of a league. It doesn't sit well with me. But in a salary cap league where people were spending money like freaking crazy,
they really were. Shoshi. Get out of here with that. All right, we're going to get out of here then. Thanks for coming on the Crossroads, John. Really appreciate it. It's always fun talking to you. Are you still doing the Dynasty Game Night, by the way?
Yeah, still do Dynasty Game Night. Still do Dynasty Wall Street. We haven't done them in a while.
I was going to say, it's been a while since I heard that.
It's been, I don't know, we may end up taking all of December off the way it's gone. We've just had some timing issues where it's been a little bit tough, you know, this time of year. And I do Dynasty Panic Room now too. That was a new one that I started this year. And since the trade deadlines have gone by, I haven't been able to really do it because I can't offer a bunch of real life trades on a guy that I'm going after or a guy that I'm trying to sell. But once the trade deadlines are expired and trading opens back up, when there's news that I think I can capitalize on, I'll bring Dynasty Panic Room back and see what kind of trades Twitter wants me to offer.
That'd actually be a really good podcast to get into here as we head towards the off season. If anyone hasn't checked it out, because it's all about, like John says, he finds some values on Twitter and then goes sells and sends trade offers on them and sees what happens. And that seems like a really good off season tool.
Twitter overreacts a little bit from time to time. Believe it or not, it's kind of surprising.
I'm shocked. Shocked to hear you say that.
This is my shocked face.
Right, it looks remarkably like your regular face. Weird.
Sure does.
All right, guys, we're going to get out of here. Thanks for joining us at Crossroads. If we've learned nothing else, John Bosch is a hypocrite because he doesn't like trade deadlines while enforcing them in his own league. So let's get out of here, and we will see you again next week.
2020, baby. I will have changes.
I was so trying to get out of here before you could say that. all right, John, thanks again, and talk to you again soon. Bye. Thank you.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Abe on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, stick out that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Abe on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Abe on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.